Imagine handing a brand new employee the digital keys to your entire company.
Right.
They sit down at their desk, they get to work, and like exactly 9 seconds later, your entire production database is permanently deleted.
Oh, wow.
Everything gone. And you know, that is not some hypothetical scenario just to scare you. That actually happened this week.
It's just, it completely shatters this illusion we have about progress, doesn't it?
Yes, completely.
We want to believe that a massive technological revolution is going to be this clean, frictionless transition. Like, I don't know, downloading an operating system update while you sleep.
Right,
But
exactly.
the reality on the ground is, well, it's chaotic, it's deeply contradictory, and it's incredibly messy.
Which is exactly our mission for this deep dive. Today, we are cutting through the relentless, deafening noise of the AI boom by digging into two absolutely fascinating sources.
Two really great pieces.
Yeah, the first is a dispatch from the Mindstream newsletter, and that details the explosion of Europe's hottest physical AI startup campus. And the second is a deeply philosophical piece from Lenny's newsletter. It features Notion's head of product, Max Schoening, and his whole take on how AI is fundamentally rewiring human work.
It is a brilliant pairing, honestly, because one grounds us in the physical reality of where this technology is actually being built right now.
Right.
And the other zooms way out to the psychological reality of, how we are supposed to survive using it.
Exactly. And because we know your time is valuable, we're going to give you the signal through all this noise right up front.
The anchor points.
Yeah, here are the four most important takeaways you need across both of these sources today. One, the geography of tech is shifting. Paris has officially overthrown London as Europe's top startup hub.
Which is huge.
Right. Two, agency over skills. With AI now writing the code, your professional success is no longer about your technical skills, but rather your agency to direct these tools.
Yeah, totally different mindset.
Three, the quantity versus quality gap. What's being called vibe coding has created an absolute explosion in the amount of software being produced, but a massive, massive deficit in its quality.
Oh, definitely.
And four, the death of apps. The industry is rapidly shifting away from passive applications toward autonomous AI agents, which brings incredible speed, but as we saw with that database, horrifying new risks.
Those four points are essentially the coordinates for navigating this whole structural shift. We're dealing with unbelievable new capabilities, but we are completely reinventing the rules of engagement for how you actually use them.
Okay, so let's unpack this. I want to start with that geographic shift because it represents a truly bizarre contradiction to me.
How so?
Well, in an era where AI means you can theoretically build world-changing software from, like, a beach chair in Bali,
Right.
why are 1,000 different startups currently cramming themselves into a hulking 1920s freight station in Paris?
Right.
I mean, this place is roughly the size of the Eiffel Tower laid on its side. It makes no sense.
You would naturally assume remote work and AI would decentralize everything. I mean, that was the promise, right?
Exactly.
But what we're seeing at this facility, which is called Station F, by the way, is the sheer power of geopolitical gravity. The physical world still dictates the digital one.
Okay, unpack that for me.
So if we look at the broader context here, a combination of political shifts has fundamentally altered the playing field. You have the lingering effects of the Trump administration's trade policies. You have the economic friction of Brexit.
Oh, right.
And obviously, impartially speaking, regardless of how you feel about those policies politically, the economic reality is that founders are reacting to them.
Makes sense.
Plus, there's a massive unified European push toward what they are calling strategic autonomy. So founders are actively hunting for alternatives to the traditional Anglo-American default that has, dominated tech for the last 50 years.
And Paris clearly saw that opening. Because according to Dealroom's Global Tech Ecosystem Index, in 2025, Paris officially overtook London as Europe's top startup hub for the very first time.
It's a historic flip. But a shift of that magnitude doesn't just happen organically. It requires a massive physical anchor.
Right, you need infrastructure.
Exactly. And back in 2012, the French tech billionaire Xavier Niel looked at this abandoned, sprawling railway depot in the 13th arrondissement and had this wildly audacious vision. He didn't just want a co-working space.
Nope.
He wanted the world's largest startup campus.
And the sheer scale of the place is just hard to wrap your head around. It isn't just a warehouse with, like, good Wi-Fi, and some coffee, they have built actual housing for 600 people.
Yeah, it's wild.
They run 30 different accelerator and incubator programs inside the building. It is essentially its own sovereign nation of innovation.
What's really fascinating here, though, is the leadership directing all that scale. Roxanne Varza has been running Station F since before the doors even opened.
Yeah, the newsletter highlights her background, which is amazing.
It's almost the perfect metaphor for this transition. She grew up in Palo Alto, the absolute heart of Silicon Valley, as the daughter of Iranian immigrants. She eventually moved to Paris and spent a decade as a tech journalist.
Right.
So she understands the traditional Silicon Valley playbook intimately, but she brought an outsider's perspective to the French ecosystem.
And you can actually see that outsider perspective reflected in the demographics of who they actually let into the building.
Absolutely.
Because traditional venture capital has a very rigid pipeline. It's usually, you know, Stanford, MIT, or the Ivy League. But Station F launched this program called Fighters that completely bypasses that whole pedigree.
This raises such an important question about where innovation actually comes from. The tech industry has long assumed the best ideas come from a very narrow, highly educated background.
Right, the typical college dropout story, but from Harvard.
Exactly. But the Fighters program actively recruits people who have experienced homelessness, refugees, former prisoners, people without higher education. They operate on the premise that resilience, extreme adaptability, and the ability to survive complex real-world challenges are the exact traits you need to build a successful startup.
Especially in a field as volatile as AI. And speaking of AI, the concentration of brain power inside this single building is just staggering.
It really is.
The newsletter points out that 40% of all of France's AI startups are spinning out of Station F.
Yeah.
You have Mistral, the French AI darling that just raised $600 million. They have teams working directly on campus.
Yeah.
Overall, French AI funding jumped from roughly $1.9 billion in 2023 to nearly $3 billion in 2024.
And if you want proof that this physical hub is the actual center of gravity, just look at their new FEI program.
Oh, this blew my mind.
Right. Inside this one Parisian building, they have brought together Meta, Microsoft, Google, OpenAI, Anthropic, and Mistral into a single accelerator. The fiercest competitors in the entire world are just sitting across the hall from each other.
Yeah.
Today, 70% of all startups at Station F are focused exclusively on AI.
Essentially the Manhattan Project for artificial intelligence. Just, you know, with much better pastries.
Oh, exactly.
But this intense physical clustering in Paris makes a lot of sense when you realize what these people are actually doing all day.
Mm-hmm.
Because they aren't sitting alone typing out basic syntax anymore. They are managing AI.
Yes.
And that requires a completely different cognitive approach, which is exactly what Max Schoening breaks down for us in Lenny's newsletter.
Right. The physical shift in Paris is a direct result of the cognitive shift happening on the screen.
Exactly. Let's look at Schoening for a second, because his resume is basically a masterclass in modern software development. He was a product manager at Google. He ran design at Heroku. He was the VP of design at GitHub. And he's a two-time founder.
A very heavy hitter.
Very. And currently, as the head of product at Notion, he has this incredible track record of getting designers and product managers to actually ship code and build prototypes directly in the terminal using AI tools.
Right.
His core philosophy comes down to a simple analogy. If AI is the ultimate power tool, we no longer need to hire people who know how to swing a hammer. We need to hire architects.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, Schoening is making a vital distinction between skills and agency.
Okay, tell me more about that.
For the last 20 years, a skill was knowing the specific grammar of a programming language, knowing exactly where to place the semicolon so the code wouldn't break.
Right, the mechanical part.
Exactly. Agency, on the other hand, is the ability to look at a complex problem, break it down into logical steps, and relentlessly direct an AI to build the solution.
Because the AI already knows where the semicolon goes.
Yeah.
And the newsletter drops this unbelievable statistic. Google recently revealed that 75% of their new code is now AI generated.
That is just massive.
75% of the code at one of the most sophisticated engineering companies on earth is written by a machine. I mean, if you have ever stared at a blank screen trying to figure out how to start a project, you know that paralyzing feeling.
Oh, the blank page syndrome. It's the worst.
Well, Schoening points out that the first 10% of literally every project you do is now entirely free. The blank page problem has just been eradicated.
But eliminating that friction introduces a profound economic ripple effect known as the Jevons paradox.
Oh, I love this concept.
It's so relevant right now. Back in the 19th century, William Stanley Jevons observed that when technological improvements made steam engines more efficient, it didn't reduce the consumption of coal like everyone thought it would.
Right.
It actually caused coal consumption to explode because the energy became so cost-effective for hundreds of new uses.
So if we apply that to today, as code becomes incredibly cheap and easy to produce thanks to AI, the demand for software doesn't drop. It skyrockets.
Precisely the opposite of what people naturally assume. The barrier to entry has just vanished, so the sheer volume of software being created is going exponential.
But wait, if everyone has these AI power tools and people are just generating massive amounts of code through what the industry calls vibe coding, which is basically just chatting with an AI until it spits out an app, aren't we just flooding the market with garbage?
Yeah.
I mean, if the Jevons paradox gives us a billion new apps tomorrow, won't most of them be fundamentally terrible?
Yes, that is the exact trap Schoening is warning us about. Vibe coding creates more software. It does not magically create better software.
Right.
This is why the panic over the so-called Sispocalypse, you know, this fear that AI will instantly destroy all software as a service businesses, is just wildly overstated.
Because a mountain of mediocre AI-generated apps is no threat to a beautifully designed, deeply useful product.
Exactly. To build something that actually survives this flood of cheap code, Schoening relies on three foundational intellectual frameworks.
Okay, what are they?
First, he uses Clayton Christensen's Jobs to be Done framework, which asks, what is the underlying pain point the user is actually hiring the software to solve? Second, he leans on Cappy Sierra's book, Badass, Making Users Awesome. She argues that great software doesn't make the product look smart. It makes the user feel incredibly powerful.
I love that.
It's a great perspective. And finally, Brett Victor's concept of dynamic responsive tools that react instantly to human thought.
And all those frameworks culminate in what Schoening calls the tiny core theory of great products.
Yes, the tiny core.
He argues that the most revolutionary software in history doesn't try to do 100 things adequately. It does one tiny fundamental thing perfectly, and then it builds an empire from there.
Spot on.
The source highlights four legendary examples of this. The original iPhone's multi-touch screen, the GitHub pull request, Notion's modular blocks, and Dropbox's simple menu bar icon that visually confirms your files are synced.
Such great examples.
Right. Those aren't sprawling complex features. They are tiny, perfectly executed cores.
But finding and polishing that tiny core requires a massive amount of agency. It means you aren't being precious about the code because, well, the AI wrote it for free anyway. Schoening says that at Notion, they operate with a very specific, aggressive mentality. Drive it like it's stolen.
Huh.
You relentlessly iterate, test, and discard until you find the perfect interaction.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. Because driving it like it's stolen isn't just an abstract product philosophy anymore.
No, it's not.
The transition from passive, slow-moving apps to proactive, fast-moving AI tools is happening in real time. And that brings us to the final takeaway from our sources.
Shift to agents.
Yeah. The Mindstream Roundup highlights this shift perfectly. OpenAI just launched GPT-5.5, which is internally codenamed Spud.
Great name.
And the big headline is that it is 35 times cheaper per token, meaning the fractional pieces of words the AI processes to understand your prompt are practically free now. But more importantly, Spud is specifically built for multi-step projects.
That phrase, multi-step projects, is basically the death knell for the traditional chatbot.
Oh, absolutely.
We are leaving the era where you ask a single question and get a single paragraph in return. We are entering the era of the autonomous agent.
Right.
An agent can take a massive, high-level goal, autonomously break it down into 50 subtasks, execute those tasks across different platforms, verify its own work, and return with the finished product without you ever lifting a finger.
Let's talk about the mechanism of how that actually works in the real world.
Mm.
Because the newsletter gives this mind-blowing example from the automotive industry.
Oh, the aerodynamics one.
Yes. Car manufacturers are currently using these agents to compress 5-year vehicle design cycles into mere months.
It's crazy.
Instead of a human engineer drawing a part, running a simulation overnight, and adjusting it the next morning, an AI agent runs thousands of micro-simulations a second. It continuously adjusts the aerodynamics of a digital car in real time, testing endless variations until it finds the mathematically perfect shape.
Mm-hmm.
And all of this without a human ever touching a mouse.
It's an unimaginable level of leverage. And it's bleeding into consumer tech, too.
Give me some examples.
Well, YouTube is testing Ask YouTube, where an agent summarizes hours of video instantly for premium users. Adobe just launched a Claude connector that gives a single AI agent simultaneous access to over 50 different Adobe tools at once.
Which leads directly into the biggest rumor of the week from Mindstream. OpenAI is reportedly exploring an AI-first smartphone.
Yes, this is huge.
We are talking about a phone with zero apps, just a blank screen that connects you to an array of agents that handle everything dynamically.
This is what we mean by the death of apps. In this model, you don't open a weather app, then check a calendar app, and then toggle over to a rideshare app.
Right.
You just speak to the device, you say, "Make sure I get to my meeting in the city on time." The agent checks the weather, sees a storm rolling in, calculates the traffic delay, proactively reschedules your morning calls, and books the car 20 minutes earlier.
It sounds like an absolute frictionless utopia. But handing an AI agent the steering wheel of your life sounds incredibly efficient right up until the exact moment it confidently drives you off a cliff.
Yes, the downside.
Which brings me back to the story we started the show with. An AI coding agent was given access to PocketOS, and it completely deleted their production database in 9 seconds.
It's just brutal.
Decades of data, the entire backbone of the company, vaporized in the time it takes to tie your shoes.
This perfectly illustrates the catastrophic dark side of driving it like it's stolen. When you empower an autonomous agent to execute multi-step projects at computer speed, you are inevitably giving it the power to make irreversible mistakes at computer speed.
Exactly.
An agent lacks human hesitation. It lacks that vital, sweaty palm gut check that says, "Wait, should I really drop the production database?"
It is the ultimate double-edged sword. We need the agency to use these tools, but we clearly cannot blindly trust them.
And trusting them is actually becoming much harder due to a deeply unsettling psychological insight highlighted in the roundup.
Oh, the Oxford study.
Yes. Oxford researchers recently conducted a study on human-AI interaction, and they uncovered a severe vulnerability. They found that warmer, friendlier AI chatbots actually cause humans to make significantly more errors in their work.
Wait, why? Does programming an AI to use conversational filler or emojis somehow take up processing power that it, like, should be using to catch coding errors? Is it a hardware bandwidth issue?
That's the logical assumption, right? But no, it has absolutely nothing to do with hardware or the underlying model's capabilities.
Okay.
It is entirely a human psychology issue. When an AI uses warm language when it asks how your day is going or throws in an encouraging emoji, it hacks our deeply ingrained social programming.
Oh, wow.
Your brain subconsciously categorizes this software as a friend, or at least a collaborative peer. And what do
Oh,
we do with friends? We drop our guard.
that is wild.
The friendliness literally lulls our critical thinking to sleep. We do not rigorously double-check the output of a friendly AI the way we would scrutinize the output of a cold, mechanical command line interface.
So because the agent was polite and enthusiastic, the developer at PocketOS probably just glanced at the terminal, thought, "Looks good, buddy," and authorized a deployment that nuked the entire company in 9 seconds.
Exactly. We are building digital tools that flawlessly mimic human empathy, but they possess zero human common sense. And the more convincing that empathy becomes, the more dangerous that lack of common sense is to the user.
Which brings us to an incredible synthesis of everything we've dug into today. I mean, we are living through a massive, world-altering contradiction.
We really are.
On one hand, the most cutting-edge innovation on the planet requires intense physical gravity. It is clustering together in massive, heavy spaces like Station F in Paris. We still desperately need the heat and friction of thousands of diverse human beings crammed into an old freight station to generate the best ideas.
But simultaneously, the digital tools those very humans are building are becoming increasingly invisible. We are abandoning the distinct, highly visible apps that define the last decade and surrendering our daily workflows to invisible, autonomous agents that operate entirely in the background.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to pose a question directly to you, the listener. As the software in your industry gets cheaper, faster, and far more autonomous, how are you actively cultivating your own agency?
It's the most important question.
Are you still wasting time learning the specific syntax, you know, how to swing the hammer? Or are you training yourself to be the architect? How can you adopt that aggressive drive it like it's stolen mentality to build your own tiny, perfect core products faster
No.
while making absolutely sure you don't let a hyper-efficient agent accidentally delete your own proverbial database?
It requires a profound, almost uncomfortable balance. You have to maintain aggressive forward momentum while exercising intense continuous vigilance.
So what does this all mean? We started today by talking about how we expect tech upgrades to be a clean shift from point A to point B, but the reality of this AI boom is chaotic.
Very chaotic.
And perhaps the biggest vulnerability in this chaotic shift is our own psychology. If an Oxford study proves that a friendly AI causes us to make fatal errors because it tricks our social programming, and if vibe coding is flooding the world with terrible software just because it is too easy to generate, maybe the ultimate competitive advantage in the AI era isn't learning how to trust the machine more.
This raises a really important point for all of us. Maybe the real advantage is learning how to be profoundly intentionally skeptical of it.
Keep your guard up, keep building those tiny cores, and we'll see you on the next deep dive.